So klingt Weihnachten bei Rewe. Jetzt festlich sparen bei deinem Weihnachtseinkauf. Diese Woche bei Rewe. Frische Netzsekt, verschiedene Sorten, je 0,75 Liter Flasche nur 3,49 Euro. Und außerdem Emira Klettscheiben, Natur, je 200 Gramm Packung nur 2,22 Euro. Sichere dir außerdem bis zum 24. Dezember 10% Rewe Bonusguthaben auf Weihnachtssüßwaren. Nur in deiner Rewe-App. Frohe Weihnachten. Festlich sparen bei Rewe. Dein Markt.
The axe of the blood god.
Welcome to another episode of Axe of the Blood God, US Gamer's official RPG podcast. I'm your host, Kat Bailey. With me today, as always, the lovely Nadia Oxford.
Hello, how are you all doing today?
And we have an unexpected amount of stuff to cover. We got a lot to cover this week. I was like, oh, it's going to be a quiet week, you know, post D3, kind of sleepy. Monday morning, we're all kind of like talking about what we want to cover and like how we're going to handle content for this week. And then, ka-choom!
Like a thunderbolt out of the blue.
Out of the blue, bam! Press release drops, Super NES Classic, coming with 21 games. Many RPGs. We have much to discuss, Nadia.
Many things to discuss. So thank you, Nintendo, for giving us a busy week. I mean, we're all still a little bit sleepy from E3, but that's okay.
I don't think I'm complaining. I'm certainly like, no? Oh yeah, rubbing my hands. Like, this is right in our wheelhouse. We could talk about the Super NES Classic all frickin' summer, right into the fall.
Because people like hearing about it, that's for sure, and I like talking about it.
But I'm already mad, by the way, though. Like, there was a picture on Reddit yesterday. Mm-hmm. It's like, just a reminder that you're not going to be able to get a hold of a Super NES Classic because of these assholes. And then it showed a picture of a friggin' pyramid of NES Classics. And you know how those people get those? It's not that they just sit on Amazon and then buy. They have bots.
Yeah.
They got bots. Yeah. I can't beat that. I can't compete with that.
By now, my article about basically there's a big fight on Reddit between collectors and, you know, flippers, scalpers, about the whole thing. And you have the scalpers saying, well, you know, we're the ones who sit in line for hours and hours and wait. And there's other people saying, yeah, but that's not how it's done these days. There's people who have bots that buy, like, everything at once. And it's just not a matter of, it's not fair, frankly.
I should have bought an NES Classic for $150. The only reason
I have one.
Oh, you did it
on launch day.
Okay. Yeah. I was thinking about it pretty hard, but at the end of the day, like when I was looking at the games, like I played all of those games so much that it was like, oh, I mean, it's a cool collector's edition, but I think I'm gonna hold out for the SNES Classic. But I am hell or high water. I am buying an SNES Classic. Like,
I was actually kind of hoping for the NES Classic. Like, there'd be a Canadian edition where they'd swap out Tecmo Bowl for Ice Hockey or something, or Blades of Steel.
That would have been awesome, right?
That would have been great.
Oh, Blades of Steel is so much better than Tecmo Bowl. Sorry, Tecmo Bowl.
Because actually, the PlayStation 4 I bought was a Canadian exclusive bundle that came with NHL something or other. So, NES bundle, come on, guys, Canadian.
Yeah,
bundle.
Make it happen. God knows, like, when the N64 Mini comes out, it needs to have Wayne Gretzky's hockey. My God.
Oh, of course.
That game was amazing. You'd get, like, a big hit on somebody, and an ambulance would go...
You've destroyed this man and his prospects.
I mean, this was, like, a great time for sports games. Back in the mid-90s in Madden, they had a... If somebody got injured, an ambulance would come on the field and, like, run people over, getting over to the person. It was one of the greatest things ever. Like, man, it used to be so much more fun.
Isn't that a little counterproductive?
Yes, just a little bit.
Bring in some more ambulances.
Well, we gotta get into the hospital. You just broke Brett Favre's leg! What the hell?
That's great.
But, yeah, there's a lot to cover with the SNES Classic. We're also gonna be talking about the Episode Prompto DLC for Final Fantasy XV. And, of course, Valkyrie Revolution. I said that I had thoughts. You're going to be hearing those thoughts.
I have thoughts, too, so don't worry.
Do you think, did I like it? Did I not like it? Well, I guess you'll be finding out later in the podcast, eh?
Eh?
And we may be having Phil Kohler on this podcast. Will we have him? I don't know. Like, you will know by looking at the headline of this podcast when you download it.
Like the SNES Classic, it'll be a surprise out of nowhere.
But it's really kind of down to whether or not he's able to come on the show tomorrow. In which case, we'll talk about Stormblood. But my God, there's so much to cover that it's almost like too much. So it's kind of like, I kind of want to like give Stormblood a little breathing room, right? You know, like I want to give it some space to breathe. So
Stormblood's got to breathe.
We'll figure it out. But okay, first piece of important news, Super NES Classic. It is real. It is coming out. Games, the RPGs that are going to be on the thing. And it has a pretty good array of RPGs. It has Final Fantasy VI. Big one. That's a big one.
Yep.
It will have Super Mario RPG. Not surprising. We were all kind of expecting that one.
Yeah.
It will have Secret of Mana.
Woohoo! I'll play it for the 50th time.
I will play it for the first time.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I have not played that one. That is a new one for me. Because I missed on that. I think we've talked about this on the podcast in the past. Probably. I have missed out on that one. Yeah.
I'm curious about that. We're going to have a Secret of Mana report.
Yes. I think that's all the RPGs that are going to be on that. But that's like three really killer RPGs, right?
There's also... well, I know we say, oh, it's an RPG. It's not an RPG. A Link to the Past. It's not a slouch either.
Yes, A Link to the Past. Like, I mean, you could argue whether or not that's an RPG. The Japanese version, I should mention, also gets Fire Emblem Mystery of the Emblem on their version. So that is a little extra thing. Now, some notable omissions.
Yes, there are a couple.
Just a few. Like, how do you pack so many amazing RPGs onto one console? So here are a few things that surprised me. In Japan, I'm shocked that there's not a Dragon Quest.
Yeah, so am I. I'm shocked there's not a Dragon Quest for Japan, and there's not Final Fantasy IV for Japan.
Yes, like Dragon Quest V is a huge... Yes. 5 and 6, huge omissions for the Japanese version. I mean, that's just like, it's such a given. Right?
Yeah.
So, like, wow, I'm amazed. Like, they're putting friggin' Legend of the Mystical Ninja on there, but not Dragon Quest?
Okay. That one, that's an interesting inclusion there.
Yes. Massive omission for both the Japan and the US versions, Chrono Trigger. That's a big one. Yes.
That's a big one, and I'm surprised at that one.
I'm not, because by all accounts, I guess there's a royalty issue going on here.
Okay, yeah, I guess I could see that being the case.
Still, like, Chrono Trigger, along with Final Fantasy VI, is maybe one of the defining RPGs of the Super Nintendo.
If I can speak candidly, I would actually exchange Mario RPG for Chrono Trigger.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, like, I would get rid of that in a heartbeat. And if you told me that I had to choose between Final Fantasy VI and Chrono Trigger, I would have to think really hard about it.
I would probably have to think very hard about that one, too.
I think the thing is that Final Fantasy VI, for me, is a bit harder to find, because, like, Chrono Trigger, I can buy probably the best version on DS right now.
Yeah, still hard.
I don't know how rare it is. Like, I would have to take a look. But, like, that is a really good version just to have. Whereas Final Fantasy VI, it's a little more, like, it's a little harder, right?
Yeah, like, I had that list of Final Fantasy games, which one's the best version to get, and there's really no perfect version of Final Fantasy VI. Everything's kind of diminished in a way, but I would say, for my money, the SNES version is the one to go with.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even though it has the Woolsey script, like, it spells Phoenix down, F-E-N-I-X.
The character limits, man.
Weird things like that, right? Like, it's not a super great localization, but it's passable. It's not, you know, it's not a complete mess like Final Fantasy Tactics, so...
Yeah, for what Woolsey had to work with, which is the diminished space and the censorship and everything like that, it's pretty fantastic. But as I've said many times in the past, the Game Boy Advance script is really... It tops it. I would love to see the SNES version of the game with the Game Boy Advance script. I'd be happy.
Perfection, right?
Perfection, yeah.
But at the very least, the Super Nintendo version does not have a diminished sound quality.
Yes, and that's big. That's very big.
That is very big. It does not have loading times. Those darn loading times. of the Super Nintendo version.
But it doesn't have those cool CGI scenes either.
Oh, God. I was really like, oh, man, CGI cutscenes back in 2000. Oh, man,
when I was in high school and those all came out, like, my writer's craft class, like, you know, this was grade 13, back when Ontario had grade 13. We'd all, like, gather around these, like, ancient-ass Macintoshes with, like, postage stamp, you know, real player video, just, like, everyone peering at this, you know, this image of, like, Celeste on the beach, like,
oh, my God. What is wrong with Kafka? He sure looks weird.
What happened to Kefka? Oh my God. Is that Terra or Kefka? I can't tell.
They basically brought the Amano art to life, and it looked really cool. Like, it was very stylized in a way that maybe even like Final Fantasy VII ones, because obviously Final Fantasy VII was much more Nomura. So like, for people who would come in on VII, kind of like I did. I mean, I really came in on VII. Like, I played VI first, but I really came in on VII. Seeing the kind of the Amano art like in action was it was different. It was odd.
So. It was odd, but it was also really cool at the time.
Yeah. Oh no, for sure. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Like, it was like, that was definitely a highlight. Anyway, so like, having all that, like having Final Fantasy VI for me is like very exciting. Like, being able to play it on something other than my Wii.
Yeah, that's nice. That's good.
And also having Secret of Mana, like, that is a big deal for me as well. Like, that was one that I was hoping to see. But I'm glad to see it. And I'm just like, okay, great. Yeah, like, awesome. Final Fantasy VI and Secret of Mana. That's like a great 1-2 punch. And
it really
Super
is.
Super Mario RPG, I look forward to revisiting it.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I played through Super Mario RPG. So I'll definitely, it's not my favorite RPG, but it has its charm. It has a fantastic soundtrack. So.
Yep. Now, Final Fantasy VI alone, like, makes it a good package. Absolutely. Star Fox 2, of course, is just like,
yeah. Now, talk about nowhere. Like, what the hell? Holy crap.
Yeah.
In a million years, I could not have foreseen that.
Yeah, even Dylan Cuthbert, who was the programmer on it, like, he was like, what? He's like, it's bloody awesome. Like, he's was telling Kotaku. I tried to send him a note and be like, what do you think? But they got to him first because Brian Ashcraft's over in Osaka. But, yeah, no, so, like, and then he posted a picture of them having a launch party for Star Fox 2, which I thought was actually pretty rad. Yeah.
That's amazing. That's cute.
So, we're not, so Chrono Trigger, obviously the biggest disappointment, the biggest omission on this list. And there's so many great Super Nintendo RPGs out there, but there are a bunch that, you know, you wouldn't be all that surprised that they're, like, not there, right? Like, I don't think anybody's surprised, for example, that Terranigma didn't make it onto this list.
Yeah, not surprised, but still heartbroken.
I think that nobody is surprised that, say, like, one of the Dragon Quest didn't make it on here, like, for the U.S. version.
For the U.S., yeah. But for Japan, I'm still surprised.
Are there any other versions, any other games that you're, like, going, man, why didn't it make it on this list? Any other RPGs?
I would love to know. I guess there's some sort of copyright hell going on, but I would love to know what the deal is with Illusion of Gaia and why we haven't seen it. Because, I mean, Nintendo did take care of publication for that spate of time. And even though it was an Enix property, Quintet property. So, you know, given that we've seen ActRaiser in so many on the Virtual Console, although it's not on this particular system, I'm really surprised we just haven't seen Illusion of Gaia in any way, shape, or form. I can understand Terranigma, because it's kind of a weird outlier. Soul Blazer, I guess, is the same thing, but I don't know. It just seems like they could do something with Illusion of Gaia. But it's not a perfect RPG, but it's so weird and different.
Yes, absolutely. I think plenty of people were kind of like keeping their fingers crossed for, say, like, Seiken Densetsu 3, though that was really a pipe dream.
That's really a pipe dream. Also, Lufia 2, yeah. I think would have been
Lufia 2
nice.
Is like, I know it has its fans. I don't want to, like, crap on it. Like, it's a good RPG, but I think that's, like, a second-tier RPG, all things considered.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually the kind of the reason I wanted it on there, because it wasn't a game I got to play. I mean, this SNES had so many, like, top-tier RPGs to begin with, and then, God, Lufia 2 came out in, like, 96 or something crazy like that, so it just flew under a lot of people's radars, and it's not a bad game by any means. It's a... It kind of looks weird when you have these little tiny sprites and these huge monster sprites. And not in the Final Fantasy VI ways. Like, these guys are just completely overshadowed by these, like, titans.
Yes.
But I definitely want to give it a good go.
Ogre Battle would have been an interesting inclusion.
That would have been a very interesting inclusion. I've played Ogre Battle. I'm terrible at it. Like, I'm terrible at most strategy RPGs, but I always loved the graphics for that game.
The original Harvest Moon? If you want to count that as an RPG?
I would, but it's been outclassed multiple times by its successors, plus Stardew Valley. I think people would be surprised at how, even when I played it, as much as I loved it because it was so charming and different, I was surprised at how shallow it was for such a late-stage SNES game.
Yeah, you know, I think, like, just by having Earthbound, Final Fantasy VI, Secret of Mana, and, like, Super Mario RPG, like, that is, like...
That's pretty incredible.
That is a good four RPGs. Like, that is four defining RPGs right there.
Yes.
That allows it to, like, the RPG heritage of the Super Nintendo to stand out without completely overwhelming the list, right?
Yes, so, yeah.
I think that's great. I think I'm so happy that they've given a lot of, like, time to the Super Nintendo. And, I mean, I guess you could be like, oh, I wish Final Fantasy 2 / 4 were on here. But, you know, whatever. Like,
I can understand.
Right one. They picked the right one.
Exactly. Like, you can't
so
have...
many times.
Yeah. And I'll go ahead and play it for the billionth time. I don't care. But I can see why, if you have to draw a certain amount of, like, names out of a hat, why they went with those and what they went with instead of, like, you know, Final Fantasy 4. And because I love 4, but it's kind of primitive next to 6. Let's face it.
So which one will you be playing first?
The first game on the thing?
First RPG.
Or the first RPG. God, it's been so long since I've really had a run through of Final Fantasy VI. I might go through that.
I'm going to pick up Secret of Mana.
That's a good choice.
Yes. Though somebody pointed out something.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way to have the three players going on Secret of Mana.
No, but you can have two.
You can have two. And that would actually be nice, because I've been looking for something to play with my girlfriend.
Oh, there you go.
We had a lot of fun playing Diablo 3 on the PlayStation 4, like as a couch co-op kind of thing. That would be a lot of fun to play on our TV.
Yeah, that'd be great, especially since Secret of Mana, the AI is garbage for the other characters. So
yes.
If you have someone else who's like controlling the sprite or the girl or whatever without getting stuck behind a rock every 2 seconds,
it
probably relieves a lot of frustration.
Yes. I'm also keen to play some Earthbound, because I do not have nearly as much experience with that game as I should, and I know a lot of people really love Earthbound, like, they adore that game.
Earthbound is a I will warn you, it is a slow start, but
yeah,
it's actually quite, it's one of those games where it starts off quite difficult and gets a lot easier the further you get in once you have more party members, because it still has those very archaic sort of Dragon Quest mechanics behind it, which I've had people yell at me for even saying that, but the fact remains, you know, it is kind of archaic in spots, but I find it is one of the most warm, heartfelt games I've played, like, when I stuck through it. But I kind of have a bias going on, too, because I played it in 2008, actually, and that was a bad year, because a whole bunch of family members died.
Ooh, sorry.
And, well, it was like my mother-in-law died suddenly. A bunch of my like aunts and uncles like just passed away. My dog. That was
oh my
that
god,
was sad.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
No, that was appropriately. That was also when I got into the Arcade Fire's funeral. The album. So I just kind of like really got into Earthbound, and it has like this really life-affirming message, and I really enjoyed it. And of course, I wanted to get it done before the Mother 3 translation was finished, and I did.
There you go. And yeah,
so,
like,
I'm curious to see what you think.
Yeah, I'm keen to like so many classic RPGs that, like, you know, like I just got to catch up with, right? Like and this is a kind of a great opportunity to do that. So, I could not be more excited for the SNES Classic to come out. And for all of you who are like, "We'll just buy a Raspberry Pi instead and load it up with ROMs."
Yes.
That's not the point.
It's really not the point.
Not the point.
And it gets me angry that people even say that. It's really not the point. Especially the people, like, on the article I wrote the other day saying, "Well, you're a stupid idiot for buying it, so I have every right to scalp you, because you could just buy Raspberry Pi in a 3D shell." That's not the point.
No. The point is, this is a official release by Nintendo of these games in a really cool little collectible that looks just like the original cartridge console with the original packaging. Like the original NES thing even had like that little poster. Like,
yes.
Like they really did it right.
Yes.
They really did it right. And yeah, you can complain about the controllers, but that's not an insurmountable thing, okay? Like,
yeah.
There are plenty of third-party accessories that let you do those things. And you know what? People are like, oh, buy the third-party, like, controllers. I didn't really like them. They're too clicky.
Oh, I hated those, any third-party SNES controller. I never found one that I liked.
Yeah, like, a proper NES controller has a squishiness to it.
Yes,
it just feels right. I was playing my friend's NES, like a proper NES, like an original NES.
Wow.
That they like had from their childhood. And like, I was like, yes, yes, these buttons, they feel right. Like the controller feels right. But the Super Nintendo, so yeah, like just being able to play it on kind of a proper Super Nintendo, proper, like I'm doing the finger quotes, but. Yeah.
Well, even most of the games that we've talked about today, all the RPGs that we've named, I still have a lot of the cartridges, but a lot of them, the batteries died. Like, I can get them replaced, but it's a schlep.
Yeah,
it really is.
The other, like, the this is as close as you can get to kind of, like, going whole hog, like, on a proper retro setup.
Like, and you know what? If I knew Nintendo would have, like, would not have supply issues, which let's face it, they're going to. I would love to buy one for like my mom who doesn't play video games anymore, but she used to play like a lot of Super Nintendo, or she used to play a lot of Nintendo, so she'd love something like this.
I would love to buy like a proper like CR television, like CRT television, and put it on my desk and like have like a Super Nintendo there and, you know, like maybe some other stuff. And be able to play like retro games like properly, but the problem is that it takes a lot of space and it's actually quite an investment. And I'm like, I don't have the time, I don't have the room for this. And if I'm being really honest, like a lot of this is novelty, right? Like it's like I'm buying the Super Nintendo Classic not just because of the games, but because it's cool to own. It is a cool thing. Like it is a cool thing from when I was growing up. Did not get a Super Nintendo when it was like originally in production. Like during its heyday, I looked at all the other kids and I said, I want a Super Nintendo.
Aw.
All I want. I dreamed about it. My God.
Oh, same here. Like we didn't have a lot of money growing up, so I didn't get mine until I had to save up everything until 1993 is when I think I finally got mine.
I was a dumb kid. If I had just saved up my money, I could have bought one. Like,
well,
if
it
I
was
just...
harder than it sounded because my brother kept stealing my money for cigarettes.
Oh, that's terrible. But you got one. You got one.
I did get it eventually.
If I had had a bit more self-control and I had just saved and saved and saved, I could have gotten a Super Nintendo.
What the hell were you buying at that age?
Well, I bought a Game Boy and I was buying PC games was the thing.
Cat. You can't have both.
Well, yeah, I was like, I would save up $50 and I'd be like, all right, I'm going to go buy, you know, some Star Wars game or something like Dark Forces or something like that. So it's just like, I wanted all of it. I wanted all of the games. So I wouldn't necessarily trade in like the experiences that I had, but yeah. And in the end, I did get a Super Nintendo in high school. So, you know, it worked out. Like I got to play.
You know what,
by
the time I got mine and probably by the time you got yours, that's when it was really coming to its own. Like, there was just so many good games.
Well, I mean, the Super Nintendo had been done for a few years when I got mine. Like, it was, I got mine in, like, 99, so...
Oh, wow, that's really late.
Yeah, like, that was really, really late. But, like, I was able to get a lot of really good games. I think the thing that... The only thing that was disappointing was that Chrono Trigger was so rare and so expensive by that point that I just...
Oh, even by that point, eh?
Oh, God, yeah. It was definitely up to, like, $120 by then.
Yikes.
And I did not have $120 to throw at a Super Nintendo cartridge. I was lucky to get Final Fantasy VI, just the cartridge from Funko Land for $50.
That's a good deal.
It was a good deal, you know, circa, you know, 1999.
Yeah.
And it was the same problem that I had when I bought into the PlayStation in like 2000 was Suikoden 2, you know, like by the time I heard about Suikoden 2, Suikoden 3 was out and Suikoden 2 was incredibly rare.
Wow. Yeah, that was always a very hard, I remember that always being a very hard one to find, and I actually got mine because I was pissed off at Final Fantasy VIII, and someone told me, you know what, you should really go play Suikoden 2. So I said, oh, okay, and I went and I bought it. Good purchase.
Yes. In any case, yes, Super NES Classic. It is coming out at the end of September. We will be revisiting it. In the meantime, by the time you hear this podcast, we should have the definitive ranking of all of the games on the website. So you should go check that out. What's going to be number one? Will it be Final Fantasy VI? I guess you'll be finding out, won't you? Spoiler alert, Final Fantasy VI is pretty high up on that list. When I was writing about it,
Surprise.
I ended up writing more than I was thinking, and I was like, man, Final Fantasy VI was a really good game. So
It was fantastic.
it's fantastic.
Godspeed you.
So speaking of Final Fantasy, continuing onward, Final Fantasy 15 just saw a new DLC release this week. Episode Prompto came out, and so I downloaded it, I played it, it's about 2 hours. Ended up enjoying it more than Episode Gladio, Nadia.
I think I read your review. You mentioned one thing that it has that Episode Gladio doesn't have is there is a bit of an open world component.
Yes, a smaller one. It's kind of a snowy sandbox, as it were. So what happens is you escape from this like kind of research laboratory where like you're learning about Prompto's past and stuff. And then when you do, like you escape out on a snowmobile, and after like a brief chase sequence, you're kind of left to explore at will. And there's not much there, much like the usual Final Fantasy 15 landscape, but it is really pretty, and it is fun to like jump off ramps and stuff in your snowmobile.
That's pretty cool, I have to admit.
And there's like, so one of the first things you see is like a side quest, and the side quest is like your very own something, and like you see a bunch of like monsters attacking something, and I like, and it said rescue it without it dying. But it died. And I'm like, would I have been able to get a pet? Would I have been able to ride around on this thing? So I'm like, really, like, I really want to go back and just see if it's possible to save the thing. Because it died too fast. It kept dying too fast because the monsters would get it before I could get to it.
Do you have any idea what it was at all?
Some kind of monster thing. It was like kind of fuzzy.
Aww.
Yeah, I don't know. It seemed a little big to be like the pet that follows you around. So I was wondering if it's something I could ride.
You saved the polar bear. Now you may ride the polar bear.
I think the only way to be able to rescue it is to run over the monsters. Because you can do that. You can
Wow.
actually do that in the snowmobile.
That's awesome.
So I'm going to compare Final Fantasy 15 Episode Prompto to something that I wasn't really expecting. Metal Gear Solid.
Okay, Shadow Moses Island. Shadow Prompto
It
Island.
seems to kind of want to be Final Fantasy 15-ish. Or sorry, Metal Gear Solid-ish. So it has a third-person shooter component. So you can get an SMG, you can get like a rocket launcher, that kind of thing.
That's funny.
And that's a secondary weapon. And there's also a stealth component. Like you can do stealth kills, kind of like Uncharted, I suppose, or like Metal Gear Solid 5. And then it concludes in a very Metal Gear Solid-ish type. Like
What, just
final
go like
chase
da da da
sequence.
da
No, but I don't want to spoil it. Like, I don't want to spoil
Okay.
it, but when you see it, it's very Metal Gear Solid, even down to the way that
That's
it
pretty
plays.
funny.
It kind of reminded me of Metal Gear Solid 3, actually. Like the end of Metal Gear Solid
Oh,
3.
interesting. Which
Yeah,
has a
so
great
you'll know what I
ending.
mean when you see it, but it's pretty cool. I think the boss battle before it is more fun. Did you ever finish Final Fantasy 15?
No, I didn't.
Did you get to the part where the Dragoon shows up?
Yes, I know Ariana or whatever her name is.
She's great, isn't she?
She's great. She's got this crazy ass like outfit, but I loved her. She was just really neat.
Yeah, so she shows up. So
Oh.
she is Prompto's buddy in this one, because I guess
Oh, that's
Noctis
cool.
tells her to go watch over him or something.
Watch over my fat ass friend, who used to be a fat ass.
And yeah, Prompto used to be a pudgy little kid. It was actually kind of cute. He was a pudgy little nerd. I had no idea. He was Martin Prince.
Oh, I actually he was totally Martin Prince because I watched the anime episodes that preceded the game, and yeah, it kind of shows how he like had he was just like kind of a fat lonely kid with no friends until he met Noct.
Yes. So she shows up, And it made me realize something, actually. Final Fantasy 15 is better when it's just two people. Like,
That's interesting.
yeah, when it's just two or three characters rather than, say, five, four.
The
Like,
board,
I
the whole
think
boy band.
the battle system just seems to kind of work better. So the way it works is, like, not, let's see, Prompto has his handgun, and your goal basically is to get behind enemies and, like, shoot them, and that will trigger a skill link attack. And in Final Fantasy 15, like, there's so many characters, like, running around doing things that it gets really kind of messy and kind of
Absolutely. I
confusing. Where so it makes things a lot easier to manage when it's just the two of you, like, doing things, and it feels good. Now, it took me a while to realize that I had to actually just hold down the shoot button and then just dodge around. And then it felt a lot better. Like, initially it was pretty awkward. I'm like, going, I don't understand this. What's going on? But now, like, I was like, okay, this is much better. And then you also have a melee attack, you have a grenade that you can throw, and you have the secondary weapons, like an SMG, sniper rifle, and rocket
Jeez.
launcher. And
Nice.
initially, it doesn't feel that great. Like, the gunplay does not feel super great. But as you kind of get the hang of it and you kind of realize that it's like a secondary attack, it feels a lot better. And like, I came to like it. And there's actually a sequence that was very Metal Gear Solid-ish, where you sneak up behind a guy, you take him out, you go up to the top of the watchtower, take out the guy there, grab the sniper rifle, shoot the exploding barrels to kill the guards who are there, and then, like, take out the guards with your sniper rifle, and then continue on to the building. And yes, I know Metal Gear Solid, it's all about the non-violent solutions and all that stuff,
But you can go for violence.
but it still kind of reminded me of Metal Gear Solid, even down to the fact that you're kind of invading a base secretly, sort of like Metal Gear Solid. So, yeah.
So that sounds pretty fun. And we have episode of Ignis coming out in the winter, if I'm not mistaken.
Not till December, though. It's going to be a while.
That's the one I'm really interested in, and that's the reason I really need to get through the game, because I love Ignis, the stupid nerd.
How far did you get?
I actually got around to the part where shit went down, and well, I guess we can talk a little bit of spoilers, but you find out what happens to Ignis. Like, he gets injured in a way that's quite debilitating. So I wanted to see how that would wrap up, but then, like, Zelda came out and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right about the time that the game gets really grim.
I think I was really surprised at the tonal shift because, yeah, that was also right after another certain event happened that kind of surprised me, and Nacht went Super Saiyan, and
That's the rule of good storytelling. Like, shit has to get real in Act Three.
You're right.
They have to be tested.
It's not like I was unhappy where the story was going or anything like that. It's just one of those instances where I was forced to stop playing for a while, and then, of course, the nature of our job is it's hard to go back to a game once you stop.
Yes, exactly. Like, it's just been a rolling, like, I gotta play this game, this game, this game, which has kept me from going having time to go back to Nier Automata, unfortunately.
Or
Or finish
Zelda.
off Breath of the Wild. Like, I'm freaking halfway through Breath of the Wild. I really want to wrap it up, darn it. So I can just say, I finished Breath of the Wild, darn it. Yeah, it's done. I finished it. It's over, baby.
You gotta have
But
that darn it at the end. But there's DLC coming out this week.
yes, oh my God, yes, the DLC is coming out. Like, even that, so much to discuss. I'm actually kind of surprised. Like, this is supposed to be the dead period, Nadia.
Someone didn't get the memo.
I'm supposed to be getting a break. That's a thing that we're gonna have to handle. Ugh. Anyway, I digress. Episode Prompto for $5, 2 hours of a good time. I really enjoyed the second to last boss battle. Final boss battle, whatever, it's a set piece. It's very Final Fantasy 15-ish. Overall, I think it does a lot to kind of fix Prompto's character.
That's good, because he was always a very up in the air sort of character. Like, I think you mentioned it in review, they really had no idea what to do with him besides, hey, I'm a photographer.
Right, that was the problem, was that he tagged along. He was the comic relief. I listened to Bob's Talking Simpsons podcast, which you should go listen to. It's really great.
Been meaning to listen to that, yeah.
And they refer to some characters as joke monkeys. Like, they don't really exist except to be the comedic relief. They're there to say a joke and then leave, right?
Yeah.
Or be a punchline. And that's what Prompto was. He's there to be the silly one. He's there to be like, ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba, right? Chigao! Yeah, so, I mean, and then his, like, big resolution, like, his big revelation just comes out of nowhere. It feels wholly unearned. And you're like, oh, okay, Prompto, that's nice. I'm still sad for you.
And I guess.
He has a lot more pathos in episode Prompto. He is thinking about his place in the group. Like, they kind of like going, what is my place? Like, what do I bring? Because Noctis is the leader and Gladio is, like, strong and kind of the dad figure and kind of the mentor, and Ignis is like the smart one who can cook and do everything and drive, and what do? I take pictures, I'm a photographer. I can relate to that. I can relate to feeling like the useless one in a group.
Aw, sad, but yeah. I can relate to.
So yeah, like, so there's a lot of that, and then of course it is a little bit of an arc. There's a little bit of an arc of self-discovery, like discovering his past, coming to grips with it. And having the Dragoon lady come in, like, is a big, like, it helps a lot. Because it's not just Prompto brooding. Like, she is there to talk to him. And I think she makes kind of to be, like, a really nice foil to Prompto. So,
yeah. So, she was really cool. So, I'd even just buy it for that alone.
Yes. So, 2 hours, $5. I recommend it. If you're not sick of Final Fantasy 15. Which I know plenty of people are. Plenty of people are just out on Final Fantasy 15. Like, it's actually kind of staggering, the hate that game gets.
That's kind of sad. I know a lot of people who still love it. They love the characters, at least.
Yeah, I, like, mentioned on... I was like, you know what? Arden's a good villain on Final Fantasy 15. Because I like how... I like how he... Let's see. I played in Japanese, and the Japanese voice actor does a really great job of making him seem really oily and, like mysterious and, like, condescending. And you're like, you know this guy is up to no good. But you're like, what's his angle? What's going on here? And he does that through the entire game. So you really want to know, like, what's going on with this guy? And they like, and the payoff is pretty decent, right? And like,
yeah,
you're like, okay, yeah, no, that was good. So I was like, Arden is a good Final Fantasy villain. Like, I'm not saying that he's the best Final Fantasy villain. I don't think he's Kefka tier or anything, but he's good. He's good.
Good enough.
And
good
people
enough.
Are like going, what are you talking about? Arden, he's not great. Final Fantasy 15 is terrible, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, geez, calm down, man.
For a game that had such a troubled development, I think it turned out pretty good. It could have been so much worse.
It could have been worse, but I'm going to go out and say it's not just that it could have been worse. It's that it charms the heck out of me.
Oh, yeah, I still find it extremely charming, and I am looking forward to going back to it.
When I was playing episode Prompto, and, like, especially the latter part of it, when I got the hang of it, and I'm playing with Prompto and Dragoon Lady, I'm like, yeah, this is great. I like the breezy pace, I like the dialogue, I like the music a lot.
Yeah, the music's great.
It feels good. Like, it's just, it's nice to go into. I like it. I like Final Fantasy 15. Fight me.
Fight us in the comments, people.
All right. A game that I did not like.
Uh-oh.
A game that I did not like. Valkyria Revolution. Yeah. So.
That's a game.
I reviewed it earlier this week. You can go read it on US Gamer. I was not impressed with it, unfortunately. So I gave it a 2 out of 5, ultimately. And... oh, man, there's so much to cover with that game. Like, it's just, like, all the things that, like, I don't particularly like. But I think its biggest sin, ultimately, Nadia, it's boring. Mm-hmm. It's not that good. It's boring. It bored me. It was boring.
Yeah, we've talked at length about how the game should be evaluated on its own terms. And because, let's face it, Valkyria Chronicles is one hell of a high bar to reach for. It's just a fantastic game, and I enjoyed the hell out of it. But just how boring, and not only is it boring, but it tries so hard to be cool, and it just fall on its face like a fucking teenager. Like, okay, I didn't play the full game by a long shot. I got as far as the first boss battle, and just, okay, like I said on Twitter, the antagonist, Almeth is his name? Amleth?
He's Amleth the protagonist. Ophelia. He's not the antagonist. He is
Sorry,
the protagonist.
The protagonist. Almeth. I was going to assume. Yes. Almeth. Like, Almeth, Ophelia, House Huddle. Anyway, just, I said on Twitter, he looks like Clint Eastwood trying to hold in a fart because he's trying to pull off that, like, cool anime protagonist look. But I don't know, the PSP character model, sorry, PS Vita character models are just awful. God, they're bad.
Yeah, it's really ugly on PS Vita, unfortunately. The textures, like, are practically non-existent. Like, it animates really poorly. Like, it's playable.
Yeah,
playable. It is playable. It, like, it runs in a reasonable pace. Like if you are willing to kind of put aside any, like, any of the graphics, you can be like, okay, this is a thing that I can play. But I sort of feel like the graphics were compromised by, I feel like both the PS4 and the Vita version were and ultimately compromised by the fact that they tried to split it between handheld and console.
Yeah, and nobody won in that battle.
No, absolutely not. But yeah, but, no, but it's the art. It's also the art. Like, the art's just really generic. Yeah.
Yeah, where Valkyria Chronicles is just such a stylish game.
It is.
It has that, like, almost hand-drawn look to it. It's just gorgeous.
Yes. I would say that Valkyria Chronicles looks better than Valkyria Revolution.
Like, oh, God, yeah.
It's a better-looking game.
There's no contest. But I was just, like, laughing because I beat this first boss. Just big, stupid dragon tank. Like, okay, whatever. And this Almeth guy is like, where's Miss Maria? And I'm like, oh my god, the guy is going to say I raped her. He's going to say I raped her. this is going to happen. And then the guy who's, you know, he's got the sword against his throat and he says, oh yeah, she was my mistress. She was a real slut. I'm like, oh my god, what the fuck am I playing? What am I playing? Is this 2 years old? I feel like I'm back in high school. And it's just like, I'm thinking back to, like, Valkyria Chronicles again, I'm sorry, I can't help it, and just, like, how well everyone was introduced and how charming it was and how well it set up the conflict with, like, you know, the Dark Sins, and I just wanted to weep bitter tears.
So, yeah, Valkyria Revolution, in many respects, it's the diametric opposite of Valkyria Chronicles. Yeah. Like, yeah. In Valkyria Chronicles, it features a group of people who are coming together to try and save their town. They are trying to save their country, which is being invaded by a large hostile empire. Like,
it escalates really nicely.
Yes, like your town comes under attack. Like, even though you beat them, like, they still march through. Like, so just by virtue of that, like, it establishes a bunch of characters who are ordinary people. It dwells a lot on their normal jobs, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And they're not superheroes, right?
No, they're kids.
They're kids. They don't have superpowers per se. They have, you know, they have some potentials and
they have talents, basically.
They have talents. They wield guns and machine guns and rocket launchers. Mm-hmm. If you see a tank, you're like, oh crap, a tank.
Yeah.
I'm in deep crap now. Like, how am I going to get around this thing? Because it's going to kill the hell out of me, right?
Yeah, you really have to plan around a tank.
Absolutely. So, I mean, then much later in Valkyria Chronicles, one of the characters does get superpowers. Like, let's be honest. And let's not overpraise Valkyria Chronicles. It gets very anime, especially in the latter part of the game.
But that's what I loved about it. It had these anime tropes, but they're just so well combined with like actual history that I just couldn't help but be charmed. Like, charmed the pants off me for a game about, like, genocide and slaughter and war.
Yeah, and one of the best things about it was that it had this sprawling cast, and most of whom you never actually see talk to one another, but you felt like you knew them. Because you could read their dossier, you could look at their potentials, and their potentials told a story.
Absolutely,
like, you would say, oh, he has, like, a pollen allergy? That's funny. Or, oh, she only likes girls. Interesting.
Yeah.
Or, like, oh, this person's, like, totally into that guy. Okay. Oh, wow. Fanfic alert. And when they talked, like, the few lines that they had were just so full of personality, right? Like, you had the sniper gal, I think her name was Maria, she had the lone wolf potential. She didn't want anybody around her. She just wanted to be on top of the tower, sniping.
Yes, I used to use her like crazy.
You had a real strong sense of who she was.
Yeah, because she had this like really low, almost crazy voice. Like, I remember her. She was fantastic.
And yes, like, they're mostly anime tropes, let's be honest. But I just, you really had a strong sense of camaraderie. Like, you really liked this squad. So, by contrast, Valkyrie Revolution is, so our main character is a kind of brooding mercenary type with dark past. Doesn't say much. We have Ophelia, who is kind of your typical anime character who's like always worrying about like doing things wrong or not doing things right. Here's a weird contrast between Valkyrie Revolution and Valkyria Chronicles. In Chronicles, you're a bunch of ordinary people defending your home. In Valkyrie Revolution, it like the ordinary people like don't even figure in. It's a bunch of royals. Like,
yes.
Like the general premise is that a cabal of business leaders and politicians secretly come together and decide, irrespective of the common people, to throw off the yoke of imperial oppression, right? Because apparently they're like a colony. And like, it kind of tries to call back to the colonial period, but they're not going to actually have like people in, say, Africa throwing off the yoke of European oppression. No, it's going to be a European country that maybe kind of Eastern European, for example.
Maybe.
Throwing off, say, Russia. Throwing off the Russian yoke of oppression, which, interesting. Okay. But there's a fixation on royals and the importance of royal families. And, like, what do the royals think? How do the royals represent their people? And it's very old-fashioned. Like, I think Winston Churchill would really like this game. I mean, it's like, okay, it's weird in that respect. It is the diametric opposite of Valkyria Chronicles, where you're seeing collateral damage. The squad is interacting with regular people. The squad is regular people versus Valkyria Revolution, which is obsessed with high-level discussions, high-level strategy. Yeah. Occasionally, you'll see the common people going, well, I think this war was ultimately a good idea because it was totally like, it was time that we go and take over Ipsaria. Yes, like, it's time for us to be good. Good thing there's no collateral damage whatsoever.
Nope, none at all.
Yeah, so in that respect, it kind of immediately rubbed me the wrong way because, look, I don't want to get too political, but I will say that I have a serious problem in real life with like this kind of idea of like, at the highest levels of our government, people like high level business people and politicians conspiring to essentially overthrow the will of the people and like do really crazy crap.
Yeah.
Like one of my favorite comics from like 2008 was like Barack Obama, like first day he's walking down some stairs and he walks in. He's like, I'm going to be president. We're going to fix things. We're not going to do any stupid wars anymore. And they're like, oh, Mr. President, we've got a problem here. And he walks in and he sees a giant space whale. And the space whale says, you're going to invade Norway. Like, I have some, like, just serious problems, like, with a lot of the tonality, like, just on a personal level going up with Valkyrie Revolution. And to its credit, it seems to be questioning it because it's framed, interestingly enough, like, as an academic discussion between
like, I thought a student
professor. And they're going, like, these people, like, these traitors, that they're called the traitors, were their actions justified? Like, you know, they're having a discussion. The problem is that discussion is very boring.
It's very long and very boring, and there's a lot of, I know it's a discussion, but there's a lot of talking.
Yes, it's very expository, lots of back and forth. I'm just like, okay, yeah, like, there's lots of people sitting over tables.
Yeah, and that's a problem when your characters don't change facial expressions.
Yes. Yes. So they're sitting over a table and they're like, oh, we should go and we should seize the supply of Ragnite from Ipsaria and then we should proceed on. Meanwhile, I will be handling the parliament. I'm like, oh my god, please no. Like, that stuff is not interesting if there's no sense of emotional stakes and if you don't really care about the characters. It's just...
Exactly.
Like, why does Game of Thrones work? Because you know that even as they're having those discussions, you know that somebody's going to get a knife in the back, and it might be a character that you like. When you see two characters talking in Game of Thrones, it is laden with subtext. Like, there are just so many little poison daggers, like verbal daggers going, like furtive glances. You're like, oh, what's that person's agenda? What's that person thinking? Here it's literally just,
I mean,
like,
it is called
people talking.
A Game of Thrones.
Exactly.
I know, yeah. It's based on a Song of Ice and Fire, but it, ultimately I think Game of Thrones is a good title.
Yes. So, long story short, it actually brings me back to the critique of Star Wars, the prequels, where they were like, look at the way that this is framed and blocked. Like, every conversation that's not a battle is like two people sitting over a table.
Yeah. Yeah,
and back and forth shots, very simple back and forth shots, people sitting at tables, people walking down a corridor talking. Mm-hmm. Like, it's boring. Like, it's framed in a boring way, and Valkyria Revolution does the same way.
Yeah, and I guess, thinking back, people were just so surprised at how boring the prequels were. It's like, oh, are you guys really going to just hear and talk about trade the whole time? This is the series where people, like, flew ships through trenches, and we're going to talk about politics and trade blocks, huh?
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah, and it kind of does the same thing in Valkyria Revolution, but, and you know, like, I'm kind of a political and historical junkie, and mm-hmm. I'm kind of the kind of person that this should be aimed at.
Exactly.
Well, without any stakes, without, like, any, like, sense of who the characters are or why I should care about this country, it doesn't resonate. It doesn't mean anything to me.
No, it just kind of really throws you in, like, from the start. Like, here's a bunch of characters, and the stakes are really high, but we don't know why, and we don't know why we care about these characters. One of them was wearing pajamas. What's the deal with that?
The Expanse had the same problem, actually, at the start. If you're not familiar with The Expanse, it's kind of a realistic sci-fi series on Sci-Fi, and I finished watching the first season. And the first few episodes, like, you just don't know who these characters are. But it's throwing so much lore at you and so many, like, political discussions. It's overwhelming, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not until it narrows the focus to a handful of really, like, players, like, and you start to get a sense of their motivations and who they are and why you should care about them, that it becomes much more interesting.
Right.
And Valkyria Revolution tries to do that, but it doesn't do it in a very interesting way.
Right.
Like, the main character is mad because his orphanage burned down, and...
I shouldn't laugh, but it's always a fucking orphanage.
Yeah, it's always a fucking... Yeah, okay. Whatever.
Like, I'm sorry for laughing at the orphanage.
Both sides. He wants revenge on the Emperor, but he also doesn't like the traitors. Like, so, like, okay, yeah, like, he has problems with everybody. Moral ambiguity, everybody. And actually, he might be the most interesting part. Like, the parts where you see him talking to the rest of the squad, you're like, this is the most interesting part. But the rest of the story, no. Like, it's just way too many friggin' people sitting on couches or sitting over tables talking. It's expository and boring. Moving on. The actual combat, also diametric opposite of Valkyria Chronicles. It is
that is weird. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't like it. What did you think of it initially?
Here's the thing, like, I'm kind of so-so on a lot of strategy games, but I love the way Valkyria Chronicles just kind of, I thought it already had a perfect balance of, like, action, quote-unquote, and strategy. With Valkyria Revolution, I was just kind of running all over the place and, like, swinging a sword. Like, okay, why can't I just go play Dragon Quest Heroes again, or Dragon Quest Warriors again, or whatever, the Musou games, like... What is the point? Why do I have all these crazy-ass Saiyan powers? You know what I mean?
Yes, you have, like, four characters, and unlike Valkyria Chronicles, where, like, you know, one enemy can, like, potentially take you out, right?
Yes.
Like, take out a character. It's like, oh, I screwed up. Oh, here comes a shock trooper to, like, fill me with bullets. I'm dead.
Yep.
Awesome.
That was
good
my
job,
fuck
me.
Up. Go me. Woo. War's
you
over.
You are literally taking out swaths of enemies. Like, you're taking out huge swaths of enemies. And you're like, well, dang. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, like, I have superpowers. Like, this,
yeah.
Like, has no bearing on reality. It reminds me of that episode of Gundam Wing where they're like, we've had so much political drama. Now we are going to take on literally the entire enemy force. Let's say take 50 mobile suits apiece. Like, that's what it is. Like,
yeah.
There's
it's
no sense of,
the
like, these
noise.
Enemies being dangerous. You can just run in and you can hack and you can slash, and you can take them out, which in its own way, not that it's okay. It's like not that.
Yeah.
Satisfying.
I mean, like there were some battles in Valkyria Chronicles that, that do kind of drag on.
Yes.
But at least, I don't know. I found them more interesting because at least early in Valkyria Chronicles, as I said before, there was really that escalation of danger. Like when you see that tank and you don't have any sort of way to fight back, you know, okay, if I make one wrong move, I am dead.
Yes.
But and you don't get that sense at all in Revolution.
Just purely from the standpoint of Revolution, I think the actual, like, taking out enemies can be kind of satisfying. You throw a grenade.
Yeah, like, on its own.
Yes.
Like, standing apart on its own, it's okay. It's fine for the combat. If it was a game with a more interesting characters that weren't just like anime cutouts and graphics that weren't PlayStation 2, I know it's really shallow of me to judge on graphics, but my God, their hair, it's their hair is clipping through their shoulders, people, and it's all like solid, like one piece of anime hair, like you get in like fucking Final Fantasy 4 or some shit.
Yeah. I think some of the problems that I have with it is that there's like a cover system of sorts, but like you can only like take cover, quote unquote, on the edges of buildings, which is really awkward.
Yeah, it's weird.
Like the stealth, any stealth stuff is almost pointless, essentially, because you will always get discovered really quickly anyway. And anyway,
yeah,
there's not a lot
that.
Of point. You can just run in and like realistically just start taking stuff off. You can heal damage off really easily.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody goes down, you can pick them up. It's fine. You're not going to have any trouble. You get some like really strong healing powers like almost immediately.
I was going to say, yeah, just basically I was going to say I got up to the first boss, finished him. Like, good game, A++, game of the year. I'm going back to Ever Oasis.
Yeah, you know, so you're like running through these. The problem is that it gets really samey really fast. Like you're running through, you're killing a whole bunch of enemies. Oh, here comes a tank. All right, well, I'm going to slash at the legs. The legs are down. I'm going to shoot, use my rifle because you get a rifle. I'm going to shoot at the pilot of the tank. Okay, the tank's dead. Okay, here comes another swath of enemies. Throw a grenade. Kill them. Here comes two tanks. Okay, I killed the two tanks. Moving on. Like, they're like walking tanks. Like, they're mechs.
Yeah.
Maybe you will fight a giant tank.
A dragon tank.
There are two bosses that show up repeatedly. And I'm like, oh, these guys again. And they're not fun to fight because it's one of those things where it's just like, you spend like a good 10 minutes, 10 to 15 minutes, hack slash, hack slash, hack slash. It's just a battle of attrition. There's no like real strategy.
Yeah.
It's just survive. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, cool. Yeah, that's not very interesting. And it's obvious that they're kind of trying, they're putting in a lot of filler. Like these bosses keep coming back. There are missions where it's just like, now we will test out this new equipment. But it's not like you're getting a new ability necessarily. It's just like your weapons are slightly more powerful, but it's like, oh, this quote unquote training mission is so obviously like filler. Like they needed to like find something to do because they have nothing else for you to do.
That's really sad.
And like the customization, like the UI is really not that good. Like the UI is really bad.
Yeah. Like you mentioned in your review that you have to like run around to equip stuff. Whereas like in Valkyria Chronicles, like you just access a menu, done and done.
Yeah, it's all set up in a hub. And the problem with the crafting system is that the materials are at different shops. So it's all kind of overwhelming. And then when you
more filler.
Put in the crafting, like you can only order one thing at a time. So you're like, okay, but whatever, like that's kind of time consuming and annoying. But like the crafting doesn't feel worth it. And it's kind of a pain. And then also, like there's this weird skill tree thing. And it took me a while to realize that it's the points that you need to use are from your excess Ragnite spells, which are like your skills that you can equip. Mm-hmm. And you have to like basically use the surplus ones to build up your skill, like your extra stats.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, but first of all, that's time consuming and it's confusing.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't really want to bother with this. This is annoying. So.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, there's just I got to the point in my review where I was like, oh man, I got a lot to cover. in terms of like why I don't like this game. Allow me to go forth in bullet points.
That was pretty great.
Now, if Valkyria Chronicles did not exist, if this was a standalone game, I don't think it would be very good.
Like, no, just, I don't think so.
I think it's kind of like second tier budget level graphics. Like, looks kind of like a PS3 game. I don't think the characters are very great. I think the battle combat's kind of repetitive. I think the cast is mostly anonymous. I think the story is told, like, tries to weave a tale of political intrigue, but really it's just a bunch of guys talking over desks. It reuses the same enemies over and over again. It does a lot of things that really annoys me. And at the end of the day, like, the tone of trying to tell a serious-minded tale of, like, politics and war and all that stuff clashes mightily with the fact that it's a Dynasty Warriors game with some very, 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 very basic tactical elements.
Yeah, and I have to say, even the Dynasty Warriors stuff doesn't work very well, because I found I was fighting with the camera a lot. I don't know if that was the case on the PS4, yes, but it's definitely the case on the Vita.
You are fighting with the camera. You have to lock and unlock against guys quite a bit.
Yeah.
And like,
stupid.
When you're attacking, like, the animation's really stiff.
Yeah.
Yeah, like,
absolutely.
Yeah, like, everything about it is really stiff. After a while, like, as you build up more and more skills, you get quite powerful, and then it's like, oh, yeah, look how powerful I am. But it's kind of brainless, right? So, it's a real disappointment. And, I don't know if I'm going to do it this week. Maybe I'll do it next week, where it's just like, it's kind of a monkey paw game. Like, it's like, be careful what you wish for. You might get it. I was wishing for a sequel to Valkyria Chronicles, and they turned it into, like, this action game. And people were comparing it to, like, Shining Force. Like, this has apparently happened to Shining Force as well.
What a damn shame. Like, even if they had just, you know, monkeyed with the battle system a little bit like that, like, I would have been able to forgive it if you gave me characters I cared about, if you gave me a story I cared about. I don't care. I don't care about Clint Eastwood Fartman or whatever his name was.
that's the thing. Like, I can deal with a different take. Like, it doesn't have to be the same dang thing again, right? Like,
no, but charm me.
I'm okay with, like, an action kind of style. It's just really messy. It's a really poorly executed game with kind of a boring story.
There was someone, I think it might have been someone who replied to your review either on Twitter or on the story itself, just saying Sega obviously has no idea what to do with this series.
It seems like it. Or they don't understand why it was popular in the first place.
Yeah.
Why and it that, seemed that's... to catch on. They're like, oh, well, it was the magical girls with the boobs, right? And, like, the awesome, like, in the awesome setting. It was like, well, no, it caught on because it caught lightning in a bottle and had great characters who and told their stories in really interesting and meaningful ways, and the tactics were great. And maybe most importantly of all, like, it came out in a moment when Japanese RPGs were in a bad place. It was gorgeous. It was exactly what we expected JRPGs to look like in that era on NHD. It had that wonderful kind of, like, storybook like quality.
Yeah.
There was more to it than that. There was so much in this game. It packed so much in it. I loved that if you flipped through, you had, like, bonus sections that were just pure storytelling.
Yes. That was great. I love that.
I loved that you could earn medals and, like, go back to the royalty and they'd give you medals.
And you get a little ceremony.
Yeah, with a little ceremony and everything. I loved the newspaper writer. She was so great.
Yeah, she was awesome.
I loved her. She was so much fun. Like, the characters all were so memorable and fun and interesting. And it had, and it had great memorable villains. Like, it kind of had, yeah, it went a little anime with Silveria. Whatever,
yeah, but it was great.
But she was a tragic figure.
Yes, she was.
So, like, I hate going, well, it's not as good as Valkyria Chronicles, therefore it sucks. But, like, Valkyria Revolution would not be as good a good game anyway. And it's a dang shame, because Valkyria Chronicles was a great game. It still is a great game. So
definitely still play it if you haven't.
Yeah, it's available in HD. You can download it relatively easily. You should absolutely play it. Holds up great.
I might actually, have you played it on the Vita? Because I might even just go through it again on the Vita.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's available on the Vita? thought that was just on PS4. Am I crazy?
I think, I don't know, I thought I looked it up the other day and I thought it said Vita, but
I think it's only available on PS4.
I guess I could do crossplay, but that sucks.
Now I gotta look. This is kind of this is kind of bothering me. Like, I'm pretty sure it's only available on PS4. Yeah, it's only available on PS4.
Okay, so I must have misread something.
Yeah, it looks so good that, like, I don't actually think that it would look super great on the Vita.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering about.
Ultimately, like, the unfortunate thing that happened to Valkyria Chronicles was that they tried to shoehorn it onto the PSP because they were trying to go for the most popular... they were just trying to go for the most popular platform in Japan at that moment, which was the...
Which makes sense.
Oh, you can play Valkyria Chronicles on Steam, though.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'll just grab it on Steam or something.
Yes, but in any case, Valkyria Revolution, it's a letdown, and so...
Yeah, I personally can't recommend it, and obviously you can't either.
No, it's just not a very good game, and it feels like a squandered opportunity to kind of take a great series forward and kind of revitalize it after falling down a little bit in the sequels. Mm-hmm. And I hope that this isn't the end.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I guess just to sum up what Kat's saying, go to YouTube and look up the Debbie Downer sound. No. That's what Valkyria Revolution is.
If this is the end, then at least we got one really good game out of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, that is true. Better one than none, I suppose.
Yeah, and you can always go back to the original. Okay, Nadia, we are going to do that thing that we always do. Each episode, we're going to look back at how people were talking about the previous episode. And of course, last week, we were talking about episodic RPGs and .hack. And here is what some of the people were having to say. Victoria Hunter says, glad you brought up .hack in the era of episodic RPGs. I don't think it's out of the question to attribute my love of episodic RPGs to Xenosaga and Golden Sun at the time. That's another one we've got. Mm, technically, it's right. Only two episodes.
Yeah,
but it was still ended on a cliffhanger, which was kind of interesting. That fixation continued with the After Years. Another loony in my Victor mentions the After Years jar. Oh, yeah, we have another Canadian here. Final Fantasy Dimensions and also led me to one of my favorite games of all time, Live a Live for the SNES.
I have never played that, but I've always wanted to.
I think a part of that episodic RPG DNA is what won me over to a few recent free-to-play mobile RPGs. I can recognize their exploitive, cynical nature, but sometimes I just want a good cliffhanger that I can come back to later. FF14, on the other hand, sits comfortably somewhere in the middle of traditional episodic RPG and exploitive nickel and diming machine. Obviously, they have plenty of systems in place to keep you spending money, but the sheer amount of content and story and lore is supremely satisfying. Continuing on, JohnnyBoy407, I'm digging the hell out of Ever Oasis. Such a fun, lighthearted little game. Sounds like you're liking it too, Nadia.
I am. It's very much, it reminds me quite a bit of, I'm blanking, of Odin Sphere, because it's imperfect by all means, and it is repetitive, but it has that sort of warmth and color and fun that I just find very compelling to come back to again and again.
We'll have to talk to you about it a little later, see if you're still digging it.
we'll find out, won't we?
Seems like a cute little game that's going to ultimately fly under the radar. Not the least because, you know, it's being published by Nintendo, but it's not being pushed that hard.
Yeah.
By the way, like, you should go check out Nadia's interview with Koichi Ichii, who was the director of Ever Oasis and also Secret of Mana. Mm-hmm. And, and followed up right after Ever Oasis, so you should do that. All right, Ryder Kicker says, I have only played a few minutes of the first .hack after buying the game during clearance and testing it on my computer. As with most games of the era, that was indeed mostly empty space. When there were things on screen, it was pretty interesting. I should go back to it, but the fact remains there are like 6 games in the main series. I definitely remember the marketing push for this game back when I was reading EGM. It was very intriguing that Bandai was playing an entire franchise with an OVA that came included with at least the first 3 games. Too bad that the remaster will only focus on the second half, but hey, beats paying through the nose for those. Fingers crossed it will be on the Switch.
Yes.
I guess we'll see, right?
We will.
Paunchberry says, I was shocked when I found out that .hack GU is getting a remastered collection. I was obsessed with the original Tetralogy series I was over the moon with excitement in the days leading up to the release of GU Volume 1, but I never even bothered to finish Volume 2 of GU due to the quality drop I felt compared to the originals. Sure, the original Doc Hack games weren't exactly great, but I felt that GU had gotten way too dark, edgy, and self-serious, and that's saying a lot of this franchise. I probably would have seen this quality dip coming with the legendary Legend of the Twilight Bracelet anime a few years beforehand. That's what happens, right? Edgelord anime. Oh, yeah. You go to anime conventions, Nadia. You probably see a lot of edgelords.
Oh God, do I ever! the ones who dress as a cloud. I don't know if they're like just in character or like if they're just jerks. But when I ask them for a picture, they're always so sullen about it.
And finally, Turnbird says, "I can talk about Dot Hack. I played the original PS2 games. I watched two of the anime and I was very engrossed by it all. Messy, navel-gazy, and presumptuous as it was. Because that was the thing about Dot Hack. It promised a lot of depth and it certainly had characters pontificating about things a whole lot, but it never really amounted to much. All of the goings-on were ultimately nonsense causes involving weird rogue AI and minds trapped in a fictional game. It's better than Sword Art Online, sure, but it's mostly better because it doesn't sink to SAO's lows. It was still engrossing because of the characters, though. Yoshiyuki Sanemoto, notably the character designer of Neon Genesis Evangelion, was responsible for the designs in the first Dot Hack series in the original anime. He did a fantastic job of designing fantasy characters that are meant to be in-universe video game characters with just the right degree of ridiculous aesthetic and genuine appeal. The personalities were also memorable. It was fun to learn who the players behind the characters were, and they discovered all kinds of people from all like walks of life. Politicians, high schoolers, models, literal children, people struggling with their sexual identity. Discovering who these people really were was a major chunk of the appeal. That these people were thrust into ridiculous situations and struggling to make sense of it all with each other helped make it engaging. I make no excuses for it. I've definitely consumed better fiction since then, and if I go back to it now, I probably won't find as much to like about them. They're a fond teenage memory for me. It's too bad, because it sounds like the original Dot Hack was better than GU, which is getting the remaster, so. Alas.
Oh, those fond teenage memories. Just, you look back at things, and you think it was so great, and then you're scared to even play it again, because you know they're going to be shattered.
Yeah, that was me in Babylon 5, to be honest. I was like, this
oh, really?
Show is
oh.
so amazing. I love it. It's the greatest sci-fi ever. Then I rewatched it a couple years ago. Didn't hold
and
up.
And you were just like, eh, flat tire.
Didn't hold up.
Aww.
I mean, there were parts of it that I still really loved, and like I will defend it to the death, but it didn't hold up. Some things hold up. It's the stuff that holds up that's really special.
Yeah. Like, I'm worried that Star Fox isn't going to hold up.
Oh, Star Fox is totally not going to hold up. Come on.
I know.
It's not 1993 anymore.
In my mind, in my heart, it is 1993. But I know that, like, I used to play the hell out of Star Fox. Like, I just aced every level without dying. And I know the soundtrack will hold up, absolutely. But I can't really play 10 frames per second anymore. I'm sorry, Nintendo. But I'm going to try.
In my mind, in my heart, it is 1993. That is the most naughtiest statement I have ever heard.
Let's make that our new tagline.
I still think Star Fox 64 is better, and that is the game of my heart. But I look forward to playing Star Fox. But when I look at this list of games, like a lot of these games hold up so well. Super Metroid holds up incredibly well.
I still go back to it all the time.
I can go back to it anytime, any place. No joke, no hyperbole, top five game of all time. Like, just... That's
I think
it.
I like Symphony of the Night a little bit better, though. I'm fired. You heard it here first.
All right. Do you have comments on Nadia's crazy opinions? You should send us an email at usgamer@usgamer.net. Acts of Blood God is a US Gamer podcast. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are sold. Please do me a favor. Leave me a review and a rating if you are enjoying the podcast. Tell us what you think. We like to hear your feedback, especially love it if you can do positive feedback. Share the gospel of the Blood Lord. Share around. The Blood Lord loves it. We will be, of course, many ways to connect to us. You can find me on Twitter at @_catbot. You can find Nadia at @NadiaOxford. And, of course, follow US Gamer on our various social media channels, USGamer.net on Twitter and Facebook. And, of course, there's lots of stuff, good stuff on the site. We've been covering a lot of SNES classic stuff But you can also find my reviews of Episode Prompto and also my review of Valkyria Revolution, where I lay it out bit by bit on why exactly I did not like Valkyria Revolution. If you want still more details on why I did not like it.
She's very meticulous, people.
I was determined to be very meticulous with this one. I'm like, I got a case to lay out here. I do not like this game. So
yeah, and I understand. I agree with you.
All right. Thank you, Nadia. I appreciate it. We'll be back, as always, next week. We'll be talking more about various RPGs. Probably going to be talking about Stormblood, because I don't think I'm going to be able to get it in this week. But yeah, we'll see. In any case, thanks for listening, as always. Until next time, for Nadia and myself, we'll see you again. Happy adventuring.